Best hybrid SUVs. We're about to give you our top seven picks in the world of hybrid SUV models. Is your next car on the list? If you're thinking about a family-friendly hybrid, even if you're not, stay with us. Welcome. I'm Cars Guide Deputy Editor James Cleary, and joining me to look at what's hot right now in terms of hybrid SUV, fuel efficiency, performance, practicality, and more, are our EV Guide lead, Tom White.
Hello.
And key contributor, Stephen Corby.
Greetings.
We'll also look at the fresh metal we've been driving this week and unearth the comment of the week, not to mention being on standby to respond to feedback in the YouTube live stream. So let's get into it. SUVs, we can't get enough of them. Hybrids, we can't get enough of them. Put those two things together and you have a compelling combination in the current Australian new car market. Tom and Steve, we've each put together a short list of vehicles that we believe stack up particularly well. And the plan is to circle around the group, hitting the highlights of each one as we go until we get to the specifically not round number of seven. So, Tom, I'd like to start with you, please. What is the first cab off your hybrid SUV rank?
Well, I'd like to talk about one that I never thought that I would be mentioning as kind of one vehicle that's great, like really surprisingly great at something. And it's the MG HS Plus EV. I thought I'd start with that one because it's probably going to be a controversial choice. I think a few people know that it's not the MG that they might know from their past. But I think this car is particularly interesting because the Plus EV version is a plug-in hybrid. So it's not your kind of traditional self-charging hybrid as we've come to know them from Toyota. And the most interesting thing about that is it brings the price point, the entry level down from mid-size plug-in SUV down to that Toyota hybrid price point. So at $46,990 before on roads, or maybe that's even a driveway cost. I don't know. You'd have to double check that. Yep. But it is at the same equivalent price to a mid-grade Toyota RAV4 hybrid. So pretty appealing price point. It's got a claimed sort of 63-kilometer fully electric driving range, and that is for a more kind of mid-spec level of that car as well. So really appealing price point. Makes the jump to plug-in hybrid not as daunting as it might be for a whole bunch of others, because we know like other cars we're going to talk about on this particular podcast, like the Kia Sorento, Lexus NX, that like the plug-in hybrid version is always really high spec. So it's quite a jump. Like it's a big ask to say, hey, look, here's a technology that's hard to understand. You might not really know how you're going to use it in your everyday driving. Also, please pay us another $15,000 to $20,000 for it. You know, it's a pretty tall order when it
comes
to-
And can I just say, Tom, spoilers. Don't give away too much about what's coming up. Anyway, no, sorry. Just kidding. No, that's good.
Well, I don't know. You can see the NX behind me. But anyway. So a few spoilers in there. But I think that is the most important thing about this car is that it does bring that. And it follows in the footsteps of the smaller ZS bringing, you know, an electric car. It's currently the cheapest electric car on sale in Australia. So I think it does that really well. But on top of that, it's really surprising because I wasn't expecting it to be particularly good at anything from behind the wheel, but it's a really good plug-in hybrid. Like it's slick. It's got a great transmission compared to the combustion version of the car, which has a sort of a glitchy dual clutch. This one swaps it out for a 10-speed torque converter. It melds that electric driving and combustion driving together really well. And genuinely, I think it has quite a long electric range as well. Like there's a claimed 63 kilometers on
That's not bad.
Yeah, lenient NEDC cycle, but in my testing, I've seen late 40s to mid 50s from a full charge, which I think is actually pretty good.
Pretty handy.
Yeah.
And so, I suppose the other thing to say is that through sheer weight of numbers, MG is now established as, you know, a player in the market. So some of the reluctance about an unknown brand may be dissipating as we speak.
Yeah, I think so. Like they're ahead of Subaru now, which, you know, might surprise some people. So they're making a real dent on the market, and the fact that they're offering like EV and plug-in hybrid at a, you know, comparative cost to a Japanese or Korean rival's normal hybrid or combustion car is pretty impressive. So look, I was surprised by this car, and I think, you know, people who are interested in this technology who want to get that entry rung, it's a worthy option.
Good. Very good. We're off to a flying start. Thank you, Tom. Unreal. And Steve, we will now move on to you for your first option, please.
So I can't go with the rejoinder first. I was going to say, when you say they're ahead of Subaru, you mean in sales, not in terms of quality. And would you actually buy one over a Subaru?
There you go.
I think you have to be careful with the wording there. But anyway, moving on.
Yep.
I'm going to go with the best of all the options here, which is unfortunate for you two. I've got the Lexus NX, which is the one I would actually buy. It's unlike other hybrids, I really, really enjoy driving it. The combination of the power is seamless. The fact that you feel like you're actually getting more, like I'm getting a better car when you come up through the range and you drive the hybrid, it's actually the best of the lot. And yep. That almost justifies the price, which is an eye-watering 90,000 roughly. Once you get that point, then it becomes a bit of a debate. But you are able to drive 87 kilometers. So real world, you probably get 80 kilometers in EV only.
Which is pretty handy. That's pretty handy.
Pretty that's solid. A couple of days or two or three days of commuting without having to plug it in.
Yeah.
It's also unusual in being Lexus that I quite like the look of. It doesn't do too much with the giant grille. And yes, I was very impressed. It's one of those cars, much like you were saying about the MG, I didn't expect to like it as much as I did. And it really is, you know, for me, it's the very best of the
SUV. Would it be, just question without notice to you, the two of you, would it be the same underpinnings as the RAV4 Prime? What am I thinking about? I'm thinking about Prius Prime or the plug-in RAV4 that we don't get here.
Yeah, the RAV4 Prime, it's the same as that. Same underpinnings, same TNGA platform, similar kind of setup. I'm a huge fan of the NX. Like it was one of the cars that when I drove the plug-in hybrid version of it, I thought, actually, this makes probably the most sense of any plug-in hybrid I've driven. It's got an exemplary range, but I think the most important thing about the NX that maybe we've glossed over a bit here is it has a 7.2 kilowatt charger from stock. And that's really important because it's got a big battery. It means you can charge it up in about an hour and a half, 2 hours when you're at the shops. So you don't actually need to charge it up at home, which is brilliant.
Yep. Can I just say it's unlike us to gloss over anything, Tom. I found that comment well out of line, but good point. Great point. Okay. NX, we'll move on from there and I'll chip in with one, which is the Ford Escape. So the one version of the Ford Escape that is hybrid is the ST line PHEV. So it's a low profile model. I think we mentioned it in a previous podcast in Best Cars Nobody Buys. It's $53,440. It's a mid-size SUV, 2.5-litre turbo 4. And from that, you get 167 kilowatts, which is plenty of kilowatts, 210 newton metres, approximately 60 kilometres worth of EV range, 1.5 litres per 100 kilometres, the claimed combined cycle. If you want to put any faith in that, we could have the whole discussion about how that's actually recorded, but it's there. I think it's a good-looking car, and it's nicely put together and probably, arguably, underrated in the market. I don't know. What do you make of it, Tom?
I drove this car a couple of weeks ago, and one thing that struck me about it is it doesn't really stand out amongst plug-in hybrids for anything particularly. Like, I found that it's got, like, an average range, average driving dynamics, software. That's like, good. And it was the same for me with the HS, honestly. The software is, like, a major weak point. Like, I think if you're getting one of these, like, really tech-heavy plug-in hybrids, you need, like, really cool, sleek software to match it.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that Ford, for whatever reason, are behind on. I'm really keen to get behind the wheel of the new Ranger because it's got a new software suite, which I want to have a look at because I really don't like the software in Ford Europe products, which is the Escape and the Puma and the Focus. So, anyway, that's a very good point.
Very good. Steve, anything to say?
Well, it's one of those ones that wouldn't excite me as much as the Lexus, except for the price, perhaps it might come into play. But I'm with Tom on all of that, I would say.
Very good. Okay. Well, it's time to start the go around again. Tom, we're back to you, please.
Kia Sorento. I think this car is awesome because not only is it able to be chosen as a parallel hybrid, so that's kind of the familiar self-charging type that people are used to from Toyota, but it can be chosen as a plug-in hybrid as well. Both are really good. So the hybrid version, excellent. The plug-in version, also great. Like, it's got a long range, really nice driving dynamics, I think, from the Sorento just generally, but the hybrids carry it across as well. Like, I didn't find that unlike the NX, which has a massive battery and kind of upsets the driving dynamics a little bit, I think they're maintained really nicely in the Sorento. But not only is it good at all of that stuff, it's also a great seven-seater. Like, it's got a genuinely useful third row that you can fit an adult in. I mean, you wouldn't want to put them there for a very long time, but you can genuinely put them back there. And I know, that's pretty rare for the segment. So that's good to see. I think it's got great software. I think it's like as I said, lovely to drive, and it's relatively decent plug-in hybrid, fully electric range as well. Good. The major issue with this car, I think, is that it's only available as a top spec. So GT line both the hybrid and the plug-in hybrid. So it's quite expensive. Like, you're reaching into almost 80 grand territory for the plug-in hybrid GT line. So it's pretty ouchy.
And let me demonstrate once again just how superficial I am, because I think that car looks great too. I think it's
the big lead there is it looks fantastic. That's what people say to you, I want to buy a Kia, because they look at it and go, God, it looks awesome. But when you say Kia and 80 grand, it'd want to look pretty awesome.
It's true.
So true. It's one of my favorite designs from Kia, I reckon. Like, I think this looks better than the EV6.
And it's not easy to make a car that big look good. So I've always said, hats off to the designer who can do that. And an EV6 should look good.
You know, it's a pretty big canvas to work with. You're right. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. Now, and we've had a comment from Planes, Trains, and Dogs and Cars saying, is the Toyota Prius going to be attractive ever again? Well, I mean, the fact is it's not going to exist. And yes, that would presuppose that it did look attractive at one point. So it's gone, as I understand it. Toyota, it's lived its life and done its job of breaking the ice on hybrid, and it's a goner. But yes, controversial, I suppose, purposefully controversial to make it stand apart. But
I think
it's been in Japan for a long time. It's a massive success.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it lived a little bit of the Prius lives on in every Toyota now, you know.
That's a great point. Yeah.
Definitely did its job.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Tom. Steve, we're now back to you.
Yeah, so my Mitsubishi Outlander, which I love slightly less than Lexus, but I can see the advantage there with the price. Still, you get 84 kilometers of electric-only range, which is impressive. But because I do strange things with my time, I've managed to interview a few Outlander owners. And what surprised me is how passionate they were and how into the whole FEV thing they were. I spoke to someone who said they'd gone 6 months without putting petrol in it.
Oh yeah.
Now, if you want to live that lifestyle, you want to be absolutely focused on how much can I live with this in electric car and then only use the petrol when I really need to, it's interesting to see how much these people love the car for that kind of thing. And you think Outlander is the sort of car, surely I'm going out of town all the time, but in the real world, people are just using it in electric only range. And I could talk about it forever, but I'm also very excited that it's got vehicle to grid. That, you know, Mitsubishi is the only other brand offering vehicle to grid, which is a podcast in its own. As someone who has solar panels, I love the idea of vehicle to grid. And with this car, you could spend $10,000, which is what it would cost for your two-way bi-directional charger to attach to your house, and still have change in the Lexus.
Yes, we have solar panels as well, but they're very small, just to charge the radio when we're camping. And we don't have those on the house, but that's interesting for sure. Let me see. Thank you. Where are we at? I was going to say, if they're running so often on electric only, there's a chance that fuel will go stale. They probably need to...
The car gives you a warning. The car says you need to... the car actually doesn't give you a warning. The engine just kicks in if it feels like it's been too long. And it will run a little fuel through the system.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
The guy said it was a few months before it actually did it. But he was like, he's obviously been watching it, riding it down. You know,
interesting.
Because like I had that thought. I'm running a Kia Niro plug-in hybrid, which is now no longer for this world in Australia. So you can't buy one anymore. But I've been running one as a long-termer. And I found it was really impressive. If you do constantly charge it up, I managed to get like 2 months and something like 1,700 Ks. Without needing to fuel it up, just because of, you know, the constant use of the EV functions on it. So I thought that was pretty impressive for a car with a tiny fuel tank and a tiny battery.
Yes. And is there a speed that it kicks in though?
For the Niro there is, it's like not outrageous. It's like 80 Ks or something. Like,
do a lot of motoring without it kicking in.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, genuinely, it's got a tiny battery, like 8.9 kilowatt hours, and it still manages to get a genuine kind of late 50K range, which is pretty impressive.
Steve, notwithstanding the fact that these people were keen to impress on you how much they enjoyed the electric aspect of their Outlander, did they also say that having that petrol engine in reserve was a nice backstop for them psychologically. Was that important? Did that ever come up?
It's the one car thing. It means that I can have one car. I wanted an electric vehicle, but I couldn't see how I would live with that. I'm worried about charging when I'm not at my home. So you know, they've got a charger at home, but this gives them the ability to do both. And that's the FEV thing, isn't it? It's the bridge that gets you across.
Okay.
Particularly live in Australia.
Okay. All right. That's beaut. Let's move on. I'm going to chip in with another one. Pardon me. It's a Toyota. It's a Kluger. So look, the one big thing this car has in its favor is you can actually go into a showroom and buy one at the moment. We've run a story about availability of Kluger more broadly and these hybrids. So it's a car that allegedly you can actually buy without an horrendous waiting time. So if you're tired of waiting for your RAV4, here's a seven-seater in GX, GXL and Grande version. It's an all-wheel drive. So your RAV4 is going from the high-ish 30s to the low 50s across its range. This one picks up where the RAV leaves off and you're at 54 and a bit up to 75, 700. So yes, it's a different kind of price bracket, but it's a 2.5 litre 4, 142 kilowatts, 242 newton metres. You can tow 2 tonnes worth of brake trailer and you're looking at 5.6 litres per 100 kilometres for a seven-seat SUV. So I think it's a worthy contender. And as I say, it has that ace up its sleeve. It is exposed to the threat of sale. It can be purchased.
I've become suspicious of cars you can actually buy. I mean, what's wrong with this thing? How can I have one? What do you mean I can have it now?
Yes, you can have a car. Oh, I wish to purchase a car.
Look, I'm so not interested.
It's worth noting as well, the Kluger, you know, because we were talking about the Sorento before, the Kluger is available in lower grades as a hybrid compared to the Sorento, so you can actually get it a little bit cheaper. And the other thing about it is it's slightly bigger than the Sorento. People like to think of them as kind of the same size bracket, but they're in fact not quite. The Kluger is slightly longer. Matt Campbell and I put them next to each other just to find out.
It's probably a factor just of Toyota's market dominance that once they get to a certain volume, it makes economic sense to offer cars like that in various grades, where Kia may not have crossed that threshold just yet. So it has to be relatively exclusive. Okay, well, that puts us around the houses twice. Now we're going to tip in our ring ins and we'll on the fly choose a third one or a last one, sorry, to round up our list of seven. So let's make it a quick fire round. Tom, back to you. What do you reckon?
Well, the most obvious car in the room that nobody's talked about yet is the RAV4. You know, one Cars Guide car of the year not very long ago. And, you know, it's there for a good reason. I think, you know, it's not outrageously expensive. It can be chosen as a hybrid pretty much across the range. It's got a huge boot. It's got compliant driving dynamics. It's got really easy to use software. It's familiar. It's just the sensible choice and is so sensible that it is the best selling.
Sounds so great. Everyone would want one.
Yes,
exactly. And I'm sure it's got a long waiting list at the moment, because last time I reviewed one, the waiting list was verging on 6 to 8 months. So, you know, good luck if you want one. But, you know, it is great. So,
okay. Well, thank you, Tom. Next up, Steve. And this one is one, again, I believe, is actually available to purchase in a reasonable amount of time. What's your third contender?
I think it might be available because it's quite pricey. I was very much in favor of the Volvo XC60 Recharge FEV as a car. I understand it's won some Car of the Year awards in the past, and fantastic to drive, really nice inside, great stereo, all that kind of thing. But $97,990 is it's a lot of whack.
For a
car like that.
Okay.
Plus, it hurts me to promote a Volvo because I'm a motorcyclist. But. But it is, I have to admit, it's a good car.
It's another car that I love the design of as well. You know, on that topic, and you know, similar kind of price range to the Lexus, but it's, you know, it's a Volvo.
Because for what it's worth, I like the XC40 Recharge as well. I think that's a good package also.
But making a Volvo look good, it still blows my mind that that's been done.
Isn't it great? Amazing. Thank you for that. I'll fling in my last one, and I will put my hand up and full transparency, I have not driven this car. This is purely an on-paper assessment. So the Havel H6, so it's a value for money option. You're looking at $45,990 drive away. It's a 1.5 litre turbo hybrid. 179 kilowatts, 530 newton meters, front wheel drive. Not bad on the equipment front, you know, 19-inch alloys and other bits and pieces. Five-star ANCAP, seven-year unlimited kilometre warranty, 5.2 litres per 100 kilometres economy. So it's just one of those things. We were talking about MG, we were talking about the shock of the new and the unknown kind of brands, but that adds up to a pretty compelling value package, I reckon.
And I think that one as well is interesting because it's kind of the no plug alternative to the MG. Like, yeah. You know, you can't get the MG as a parallel. So that's your, you know, value option.
All right. Well, I think it's obvious the RAV4 has got to be the last one out of those three to round out our list of seven. So unless there's any disagreement, we'll move on.
You won't see me voting for a Havel.
All right. That's good. So thank you for that discussion. That's great. That's our top seven. And we are now going to move on to Cars in the Garage. Great. Okay. So Cars in the Garage, these are actually vehicles that we've been driving recently. Steve, could I kick off with you, please? It's small, it's powerful, it has amazing heritage. What is it?
It's the Subaru WRX. It's a manual, and it is the longest love of my life. I may have mentioned I was a motorcyclist. So I didn't want to drive cars when I started in this business. I only rode motorbikes. My boss forced me to drive the first WRX. I don't want to talk about how long ago it was.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a big number. Yes. I've been driving everyone that comes out ever since, and every time I love it. Unfortunately, some of them have been so ugly you have to drive them with your eyes closed. But
wow.
This one actually looks good. And the weird thing is, you know, you used to sit in them and you'd look out and it looked like you had a broken nose. Yes. You're looking over the bonnet of this ridiculous scoop. Now the scoop seems to be shrunk to the point where it's there, but it's not bothering you. It's still great to drive. It's not the hard-edged wild thing that it used to be. And maybe it's matured as I have, but I dearly love it. The only thing that's changed about it is that it's not quite as cheap as I remember. I thought the price was set forever at $39,990, but apparently it's not, and it's gone up.
It's interesting, you know, because the last time I drove a Rex, it didn't feel Rexy enough. You know, traditionally that non-linear delivery of torque, the big whoosh of kind of thrust was a Rex trait that I would have thought owners loved and looked for. And this one's been refined a little bit too much. The power comes in a nice even stream. That you talk about the first one, I remember driving the first Rex and feeling like I was on a horse and I couldn't pull it up. You know, you're trying to drag on the reins to get the horse to slow down because it's taken off unexpectedly almost.
Oh, but that thing made me love cars, the way it cornered, the way it accelerated everything. This one, not, and I was surprised that it's only like 6.1 or something to 100 in the manual. I mean, it'd be faster in the CVT, but I'd rather set it on fire than buy one of those. But but there's just something about the mid-range acceleration. The sound of it, it appeals to me personally enormously. I would definitely buy one.
Great. Okay. Thank you for that. Tom, what's been in your driveway, garage, whatever it may be?
Well, I'm going to go the kind of opposite end of the spectrum to that. And I've been driving the Mercedes-Benz EQS. Yeah, so this is kind of the electric. I don't know if it's going to be a replacement, but it's kind of like the electric version of the S-Class. And a little bit of a spoiler for the review, but basically why I set the scene is this car is asked to do a lot. So it has to be the future of the S-Class. It has to be the future of, you know, Mercedes-Benz electric drivetrains. But because they're launching with an AMG 53 variant, it also has to be, you know, the future of AMG as well. So this car has to do so much.
It's a bit of a blurring of the EQ and AMG lines, isn't it? You know, the combination of those two.
Absolutely. And, you know, obviously being a top spec, being an S-Class, it's not cheap. The starting price before you start ticking option boxes or getting it on road is $328,400. Thereabouts, so a bit ouchy on the price front, but that having been said, you know, it's not as expensive as a top version of the Taycan, so you know it's playing in that space.
That's the thing, that's part of the challenge that we face, isn't it, Tom? We're trying to, you know, I'm a ass out of my pants motoring journo, and you've got to put yourself into the into the mindset of someone for whom that's just another car. It's time to buy a car. That's what it costs. So it's really assessing it in terms of its performance.
I drove it recently as well. I tried. Someone put this TikTok saying they tried to drive an EV from Sydney to Canberra and back, and it took them 4 days or whatever. So I drove the EQS to Canberra and back to see if it could be done. And I must admit, it felt like a lot more car than a Taycan in terms of like it's absolutely luxe. It does have ferocious acceleration.
It's really plush. It's really plush, but the weird thing about it is it's so like, I don't know if it's just the spec that, you know, we've launched with this AMG one, but it seems so focused on the front, like the front passenger and the driver get this enormous screen, which I think measures it's actually three screens. But Mercedes say it measures at something like 4.1 meters or something ridiculous like that. It feels like there's so much going on at the front of that car with the LEDs and the screens and all this like AMG stuff. And then you get to the back seat and I think, well, a lot of people who are buying an S-Class are being driven in it. They're not driving it themselves. So, you know, where's the big flashy screen in the back seat? And I want massage seats in the rear as well. And, you know, not just in the front and just stuff like that.
Well, it could be, you know, Rolls-Royce was up front in saying its latest Ghost is for one who may want to drive as much as being driven. So, you know, this EQS could be a bit down that road, you know.
Well, the AMG badge says,
"Yeah,
driver," doesn't it?
Yeah.
But Tom, how great is the sound it makes when you lock the doors?
Yeah, it makes it. That, well, they've come up with like a soundscape for everything. So there's like a sound for when it locks, and it's kind of like this vibrant hum. And then there's a kind of a jingle, but it's also like a warm hum when it starts up, and it even has an idle tone. So like most electric cars will have a sound for when you accelerate, but this one even has an idle tone and you can turn it up with the system. So you can sort of sit there, and if you get a certain pack with this car, it's got like authentic and performance. And the performance one, if you sit there idling, it sounds like some sort of distant cyber V8. It's very odd.
Cool.
And
the
I think
with the sound when you lock it, you can scare people in car parks. Because it sounds like there's a moment in Star Wars where they blow something up using sound, and it's this kind of whoa.
Wow.
And that's what it sounds like. I'm like, I just kept pressing the lock button. And then I'd hide the other side of car parks and press lock and scare people.
Right? Yeah, I must admit, I would wait until people walk past it to lock it just to see the reaction.
Fantastic. I think I wrote an opinion story. It's a bit of a challenge for AMG is the sound of those cars, because I think so many of the ones that are sold right now are about a V8 burble out the back or some kind of crackling exhaust if it's the four cylinders. So that whole soundscape thing is critical for AMG's survival, I would argue.
Well, they argue that as well. They actually say that, you know, that there was so much like sort of heft put on these sound effects that they had to reflect the brand. So, it's quite interesting.
Yeah. All right. That's great. I will finish this off. I've been driving a Ford Everest Sport. So it's a 4x4, $63,000 before you put it on the road. It's the 2-litre twin turbo diesel, 457 kilowatts, 500 Newton meters, 10 speed auto. And as I said, 4-wheel drive. I had in the plus column, this thing still looks good. The new one, the new generation car is due late August, so it's just around the corner. But I think this one still stacks up well in terms of how it looks. You get the 7 seats. It's got plenty of pulling power. That's 500 Newton meters. That's lots. It'll tow 3.1 tons of a brake trailer. And, you know, things like leather accent trim, power tailgate, you've got that high driving position, all of those positives that come from driving a big SUV. The things I had to put in the negative column is it's 2.4 tons and it feels like it. The drivetrain also lacks refinement. The engine is flat out loud. It's really intrusive when you're starting to accelerate. It's a bit bumpy, rolls a bit. That's why what I mean by 2.4 tons and feels it. It's the body control is there, but it does roll a bit. And when the car's cold, it's an auto. It's a 10-speed auto. But it feels like a CVT. It feels like some clutches or bands inside the auto are slipping and the revs are going up, but you're not going anywhere. Maybe it was just a problem with this particular vehicle, but I noticed it particularly. So in summation, I'd say I think it's, you know, great accommodation, well-specified, but for mine, just a little bit rough around the edges. And it'll be interesting to see how the new generation model picks up some of the pluses from Ranger and puts it into this kind of package.
Yeah. I know what you mean about that 10-speed auto. It feels like it's got so many gears, it's becoming a CVT.
Maybe. Yes. Why bother? Just have two cones rather than all those ratios.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's in our garage. And we are now going to move to comment of the week. Right, so comment of the week. Last week, we were talking about transformers, game-changing models that through the course of history had, you know, changed the landscape so things weren't ever the same as they were previously. And Dan White came up with a really good thought. He said, I thought Ford's 1934 Model 40A, or what we call a ute, should have made your list of game changers, especially now that they're most popular vehicles here in Oz. And I think he's absolutely right. Well done, Dan. He also mentioned that he wasn't thrilled that the Land Cruiser had made it because he thought Range Rover walked all over it in terms of innovation and that the Land Cruiser 300 is now just starting to catch up. But yes, it was 1933. Famously, this Gippsland farmer's wife wrote to Ford and said, we need a car, or words to the effect of, we can't afford two vehicles. We need something that will take us to church on Sundays and take the pigs to market on Mondays. And sent a letter off to Ford Australia, and the MD said, oh, okay, and gave it to the designer, who was a young bloke called Bant. What's his name? I've got
Lou Bant.
Louis Bant. You're absolutely right. So a year later, the coupe utility vehicle arrived. Even Henry Ford was impressed, and it was a massive hit. You know, the rest is kind of history. So I agree. All I can say is I agree with you, Dan, that that probably should have made our list, and it was a mission on our part that it didn't. So there you go.
Is it then responsible for the pickup truck as well?
Well, I think the pickup truck, you could probably have an interesting debate about that in terms of the lineage of those two, when they started, who was first, what, you know, what's a ute, what's a pickup. And we have had that discussion before. So I don't know is the answer. But anyway, 1933, 1934, it's quite a way back. All right. And look, with that, we have reached the finish line. So I want to say thanks to all our listeners and viewers, and thank you, Steve, and thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
And well done to our production multitasker, Mr. Brett Sullivan. He clearly has high octane running through his veins because today he's wearing a T-shirt saying, I'll be in the garage. Jump into the conversation, Cars Guides on Facebook and Instagram, or email us at comments@carsguide.com.au. Listeners, please take a moment to rate and review the show. 5 is the preferred number of stars. Thank you. And viewers, if you're watching on YouTube, make sure to subscribe to the Cars Guide channel so you can stay on top of all our latest content. But before we go, a mate of mine's kid told me his boss arrived at work this week in a new Lambo Huracan. The chip said to him, that's an amazing car. Reckons the boss paused, looked him in the eye and said, son, if you work hard, focus on innovation, and strive for excellence, I'll get another one next year.